After being held for 3 months in Egypt, it's anchors away for the Ever Given container ship. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The giant shipping vessel that blocked the Suez Canal for 6 days back in March and snarled global trade is finally free to set sail today. It's been detained in Egyptian waters pending a compensation settlement between the ship's owners and the Suez Canal Authority. Now that a deal's been reached, a signing ceremony has been held in the city of Ismailia, and the ship is scheduled to be on its way any moment. The BBC's Sally Nabil has more.
The 200,000-ton cargo vessel drew world attention after it was wedged across the Suez Canal, bringing navigation to a standstill in the vital shipping route. Around 12% of world trade passes through the canal. The terms of the financial settlement between the canal authority and the ship's owners will not be disclosed. The Egyptians had initially asked for nearly $1 billion in compensation to cover lost revenues, reputation damage, and a salvage bonus. But this number was later reduced to nearly half.
That's the BBC's Sally Nabil reporting from Egypt there. Checking the numbers now, European benchmarks are trading higher in the 0.3% to 0.7% range this morning. Global oil prices are also on the rise at more than 1%. That's as uncertainty about the future of OPEC supply continues. The oil group and its allies failed earlier this week to reach agreement about whether to increase output. Global demand has been rising as economies continue to relax pandemic restrictions. Elsewhere, London-based financial technology company Wise, formerly known as TransferWise, will make its public market debut on the London Stock Exchange today. The money transfer company has chosen a direct listing rather than the traditional initial public offering route. Russ Mould, investment director at AJ Bell, explains why.
There are several reasons for this, and we've seen it a lot in the United States markets. But first of all, it's basically about speed and cost. There's no long roadshow. There's no presentations to investors. You don't need as big a banking syndicate, so there are less advisory fees. And you can also make it easy for your customers and retail investors to get involved, potentially broadening your shareholder base. We're still waiting for the price to start formulating, but it looks as if it's going to come with a valuation of around $10 billion, which is quite a lot higher than analysts were initially expecting.
Now, it's been 6 months since the Brexit transition period ended. And as we've been talking a lot on the show, London has been trying to sort of find its feet in this new post-Brexit era. And fintech has been one of the industries that a lot of people say is important to helping the city maintain its dominance in financial services. So does this listing from Wise today sort of bolster that view?
I mean, the UK is a massive financial technology hub. So it is very important for London to establish it, keep its credentials here. Birmingham is a big financial technologies hub, and the city wants to see these deals come to London rather than go to New York, Amsterdam, Frankfurt or Singapore, for example.
And we've seen a lot of fintech companies list here, but how well has their performance been? Because it's sort of been a little touch and go.
Mixed, I think, is the polite way of putting it. THG Group, which is an online retailer, was a phenomenal success. Deliveroo is widely perceived as being a bit of a disaster. There's still a long way to go. Interestingly, both of those had dual share structures. So the management team kept a lot more control of the votes in the company than you would normally expect. That's been a bit of a hot topic in London, but the UK regulator, the Financial Conduct Authority, is actually planning to encourage that, to try and get more fintech companies and technology companies to list in London. Big institutions aren't keen, but it worked very well with the Hut Group, less well with Deliveroo, so this is going to be another interesting test case.
Russ Mould, investment director at AJ Bell. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
$900 billion is about how much market value has been wiped off China's biggest tech companies, according to Bloomberg data. The drop comes amid ongoing concerns about Beijing's regulatory crackdown. Authorities warned this week they'll increase oversight of Chinese companies looking to list their shares on foreign stock exchanges. The BBC's Katie Silver explains how investors are positioning for the long term.
This is, of course, just the latest move. We've seen Alibaba, then it was Tencent, now Didi, and of course, a number of the smaller Chinese tech players earlier this week. And it's definitely creating fears, particularly for investors here in this region, rocking their confidence about whether or not China's tech sector is where they should be putting their money. So on the one hand, you've got the strategic investors. Those are the likes of, for example, Japan's SoftBank or Uber in China, both of which have relatively high stakes in Didi. And these ones got in early. they own a lot of it, and therefore it's quite hard for them to get out of it. And then on the other hand, you've got the mom and pop investors who bought on the listing and sadly have lost a lot of their money. Now, one money manager I've spoken to here in Singapore, he used to have $3 billion of his clients' funds in China, but he's told me he's pulled it out all in the last 12 months. Here's Arv Schreeder.
If Jack Ma is no longer untouchable, then, you know, what's in it for us? Poor offshore investors will be the first ones to suffer from that. Has genuinely scared a lot of not just private investors and SMEs, but I think some of the major institutional and global funds are also sort of thinking, look, the people behind us are not so keen on this anymore.
So Arv says that fear of this unpredictable regulation that's been coming from China means his clients are instead preferring to invest elsewhere in places like the US, Europe, Australia and Japan.
Yeah, it's really interesting what's been happening in the markets because shares in domestically focused tech indices ended their session higher today, presumably because they're seen as benefiting from this crackdown. Now, as all of this battle over tech continues, there's another strand of tensions with China globally, and that lies in the Xinjiang region and allegations over the use of forced labor there. Katie, tell us about one of Hong Kong's biggest t-shirt makers that's now filed a lawsuit with the U.S.
Yes, so it's called Esquel Enterprises. And basically, they're suing the US government, specifically the Commerce Department, who accused it of using forced labor at one of its mills in the Xinjiang region. The company was put on the export blacklist, saying it was a national security threat last July. And they say that their reputation has been deeply tarnished. Beforehand, it had the likes of brands such as Michael Kors, Nike, the Banana Republic, Calvin Klein, and Tommy Hilfiger. And they said that it's cost them hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue as a result of this. The Commerce Department so far has not commented, but it is a very rare challenge to these laws that we've seen come into play in recent times.
The BBC's Katie Silverforce. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Victoria.
Finally, two of the world's biggest airlines will this weekend begin testing fast-track lanes at London's Heathrow Airport for fully vaccinated arrivals. Passengers will be able to upload their vaccination status before boarding a flight. Those taking part in the trial will still have to follow all government rules, including required COVID tests and quarantine if they come from a yellow list country like the U.S. But the industry hopes the trial will reassure the government that airlines and airports can reduce pressure on immigration halls by checking vaccine status away from the border. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.